few months later, we had quite an early scan. I think it was about 17 weeks. They spotted that Lilia may have had a spina bifida. And obviously that scared us completely. It's not a nice thing to hear when you're pregnant. And we had to wait a month for those results. So waiting a month, 4 weeks, 4 long weeks to hear whether my baby had spina bifida, honestly, it was the worst thing, because they was telling me different things as well. They were saying, we can do operation while baby's in you. And my head was just spinning with all this information. And I was thinking, how the hell am I going to go through this? So yeah, that was awful. And then we got to the 4 weeks and everything looked fine. I think it was just like the fluid on the top of her spine that I was worried about. But that was all fine. So I'm so thankful and grateful for that.
Welcome to the Sleep Nanny Podcast. We're here to serve as your parenting partner, your sanity saver, and bring you a healthy dose of wholesome conversation with guests and experts to make the minefield of parenting more joyful and less overwhelming. Welcome back to another episode. So I am joined today by the beautiful Beau Raymond. Originally from Too Hot to Handle, she was the winner a couple of years ago, and now a mummy influencer who has the most amazing journey and story to share with you all today. Beau, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
So good to have you. So Beau, tell us a little bit about just what's been going on with you recently, and you know, just this massive transition into motherhood. What a change. Yeah.
It is a massive change, and I'm still getting used to things. I mean, yeah. Being a mum, I didn't expect to be a mum so quickly. I mean, I'm 26, but I think it's perfect age really to have a baby as well. I feel like I'm settled. My party life is like behind me now. So I mean, maybe I'll say that now, but we'll give it a couple of weeks.
You never know.
But yeah, I started off with Too Hot to Handle, and even that was out of my comfort zone. I didn't expect to go on there. I was literally during COVID as well.
Yeah.
I had someone approach me, and it was really weird because I just thought to myself, oh, I'd never go on TV. But I actually thought, do you know what? I'm sitting indoors in COVID times. What have I got to lose?
Yeah.
So yeah, I done that. And do you know what? The confidence boost it gave me was brilliant. It was so good. And everything after that as well. I mean, that's where I am now. I've got my huge following from Too Hot, so yes. Yeah, it was really, really good. But like you said, the whole transition now, I'm now a mummy to my little Lilia Lewis. She's literally beautiful. I'm so obsessed. I mean, can you tell I'm obsessed? I've got a necklace with her name. I've got my now. I've even got an L on my now. Aww. Like, I've got a bracelet with L on. I'm just totally in awe of her.
Aww.
So yeah, I'm transitioning to mummy now, so it just feels really weird. I mean, everyone's saying you're so natural, you're coming so natural to it, but I still feel like I'm learning something new every single day.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is just crazy, but I'm obsessed with motherhood now.
Bet you are. And you know what, you're right though, you will learn something new every day. My eldest is 13 and a half. I'm still learning something new every single day, believe me. So yeah, it is that journey of learning. But actually, that's, you know, it's quite a whirlwind in, like you say, 2.5 years from there to now into motherhood. Mm-hmm. at 26. And it's a lot
to take from. Yeah, exactly. And where I'm still, so I'm going back to like the influencer fashion life as well, so I'm trying to like multitask the both, so I can do both.
Yeah,
it's not just I don't have to just be a mum now and just do that, so I can always do content with Lilia. Yeah. And yeah, do my fashion as well, which is really, really fun. So yeah, I'm not restricted to one thing, but I'm trying to juggle the both.
Exactly. Like you say, she can be part of that with you. And
yeah,
you know, that's exactly who you are and now as a mum. And you know, your audience will really enjoy seeing that and how you evolve. And I bet you'll have people who can relate to that too. They've been through similar things. So
Yeah, do you know what? I've done like a lot of Q&As and stuff, and I was doing it when I was pregnant as well.
Yeah.
Asking people what their birth is like, etc. And I feel like people set out a birthing plan and it never goes to plan.
Of course.
I don't know hardly any girls that have had a birthing plan and it goes straight out the window.
Yeah.
So I'm quite glad, in a sense, I didn't make one up and I didn't get my head into such of one. Mm-hmm. Because even one of my midwives said, she was like, people come in with like laminated forms and things, like how set out they want to be, And I'm just like, how? Like, I didn't think about birth until it was happening.
Yeah.
Like, I did not think about it. I wasn't scared, anything. And then all of a sudden, I started getting my contractions. And I was like, right, she's coming.
It's probably the best way, though, because I think having a, you know, you can have a loose idea of like, okay, yeah, I'd rather it was in water, or I would rather, you know, you can yeah. have those kinds of ideals. But I agree with you. And actually, it's a really good message to get across, is that, you know, having a loose idea is fine, but don't be too hung up on the precision.
Have
because
exactly, yeah,
because all kinds of things happen.
I had a preference of having a water birth. Like, I'd say, oh, no, yeah, love a water birth. All chilled, your own room.
Yeah.
And then I ended up being induced a week early. So that was because of reduced movement. So that scared me a lot. But it was like, I went in there and I said I had reduced movement. So I was about, yeah, I think I was just below 39 weeks. And she said, oh, do you want to come through now then and we can start inducing you? And I was like, what? I was like, I haven't got anything with me. She was like, right, go home, go and get your stuff and then come back and we'll start inducing you. And I was like, oh my God, that, it feels so real now. Like, she's basically saying, we're going to drag the baby out. Basically, we're going to hope the baby comes. So I was like, oh my God, like, it got so real from then. And I remember just driving back in my car and I started crying. So I was like, I'm going to be a mum. Like, I'm going to have a daughter. It's going to feel so weird. And I don't know what's going to happen from now on. So yeah, it was really strange.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, yeah, you, that's it. The twists and the turns. And I can relate to that too. And with my first, I was water birth, hypnobirthing, all nice and chilled, everything seemed slow then. And for me, it wasn't an early thing, it was a late thing. And my eldest actually was stuck, and so that led to complications in actually getting him out. And
it's so traumatizing, isn't it?
It really is. It's not straightforward. And I often like describe, I think, what is a smooth birth, really, because there are so many twists and turns. And I think it's good to talk about that, and it's good for people to be prepared that, you know, things happen, but as long as you have good care around you and you know, you trust the process.
You need the right people around you, definitely.
Yeah.
I think it's hard. And some of my friends have had the best births ever and then some of mine have had traumatizing ones. So you just get the wrong end of the stick sometimes. And unfortunately, that's just the way it goes. Yeah. But I think people do need to be aware that it is scary. It's not an easy thing, giving birth. It's not.
Huge.
And my mum did prepare me for that. She was like, Bo, it's painful. And I was like, oh, my pain threshold's so good, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, no, Bo, like, this pain is lethal. Like, she did sort of make me aware as well.
Yeah.
Didn't say, oh, it's going to be fine. But, yeah, to be fair, when I remember when I first got induced, the midwife was saying to me, your pain threshold is actually quite good. So
yeah,
I'm still keeping that one for myself.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But like you say, yeah, it's something I don't think anyone can tell us until we actually go through it, like really what it's like. And your story's got some, you had some interesting twists and turns with that as well, didn't you? And can you talk a bit about how that
went? So I mean, I always say that Lilia is my first and last. My birth was not easy. I'm one and done now, absolutely. But to be fair, I didn't have the easiest pregnancy as well. I remember for the first month, we was going through times when I was bleeding quite a lot. So we was up and down the hospital. We had someone say to us, you need to wait a couple of weeks. So I don't think there's going to be a heartbeat. So we had that scare. And then a few months later, we had quite an early scan. I think it was about 17 weeks. They spotted that Lilia may have had a spina bifida. And obviously that scared us completely. It's not a nice thing to hear when you're pregnant. And we had to wait a month for those results. So waiting a month, 4 weeks, four long weeks to hear whether my baby had spina bifida. Honestly, it was the worst thing because they was telling me different things as well. They were saying, we can do operation while baby's in you. And my head was just spinning with all this information. And I was thinking, how the hell am I going to go through this? So yeah, that was awful. And then we got to the 4 weeks and everything looked fine. I think it was just like the fluid on the top of her spine that I was worried about. But that was all fine. So I was so thankful and grateful for that. What else did we have? And then that obviously led on to my reduced movements. I was getting reduced movement quite a lot. Hence why they said to us, right, we're going to induce you at 39 weeks, which I was pleased about. But in a sense, I've had people say to us, oh, it's so long, apparently like 4 days, something like that. And to be fair, I was induced and ended up being about 3 days I was induced for. So I went in on the Wednesday and had her on the Friday morning. So start off, my birth story is so long. So went in and, like I said earlier, they said that they was going to induce me. I went home, got all my stuff, prepared myself mentally as well. And yeah, my other half came up with me as well. And then I think he was getting in a bit of a well state as well, because he was just a bit like, oh crap, she's coming now, so I'm going to be a dad as well. So the same position as me, it was scary. So yeah, anyway, I went in and I started off with just gas and air. I said to myself, if I can do it natural as possible, I will. I'll take the pain. I feel like that is part of giving birth. You do take the pain to get something out of it as well. I feel like it's a nice feeling. You feel proud of yourself. So I thought, I'll do it all gas and air. Started off gas and air. What did they do to that first? I think they gave me like a pessary.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me a pessary to start off with.
Yeah.
So that really kick-started the hormones. Yeah. And the contractions really, really started.
Yeah.
But it was like, I was taking it very, very well. And even the midwife was saying, oh, if you go do this, you're a Brit, like you're going through it a breeze. So yeah, I was going through contractions and they started getting worse and worse and worse. And I felt like I was doing it really well. I've even got filming of me doing the gas there. Like,
yeah.
My other half was filming everything. So yeah, went through. And then I'm sure that we started off Pefidine, because Pefidine, it really started to kick in my contractions. So I said, start off with Pefidine. And so yeah, started off with Pefidine. Yeah. And I was absolutely fine with Pefidine. A lot of people have said that they had really bad experiences with that as well. My mum, she had a really bad reaction to it. She started hallucinating and stuff. So even taking that Pefidine, I was a little bit cautious with that.
Yeah.
So I was fine with that. And all of a sudden, my pain just started getting worse and worse. And then obviously they were checking how dilated I was. And then all of a sudden they was like, right, I think we can start pushing. So I've started to push, and to be fair, I was pushing for so long and I was so adamant that I wanted to get her out, and I was trying with my all, but she just wasn't coming out. It was like the bump, they were saying that she just wasn't going over.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, decided to give an epidural, and nurse has come in to my epidural, and apparently I was leaning over. So I'm so vague. I had to ask my mum this morning fully what happened, because I feel like I haven't really thought about it over and over. It
becomes a blur.
So I feel like, yeah, it is. It goes into a huge blur. Those 3 days, I feel like, just went.
Yeah.
So apparently I was crouched over, and I've had an epidural, well, like a spinal block before. So people have gone into my spine before. So I had to have a cervix stitch. Oh, I forgot about that. So yeah, I had a cervix stitch when I was about, I think they caught me quite early, about 22 weeks, because my cervix was really, really short, and it went short over a period of a weekend as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they done a spinal block for my cervix stitch, and that wasn't really painful. They numbed you and then it literally just goes in. So that was absolutely fine. I had no complications with that. And if anything, the cervix stitch, I'd say to people, get it. If they say that you need it, don't be scared about it. I highly recommend it, because that cervix stitch is what holds baby in, and if that is so short, then obviously you get a nasty outcome. And I know a lot of girls that have had miscarriages and stuff because of their cervix being so short. So I feel like people need to be made aware that cervix stitch is so helpful. Yeah. So I was very glad I had that.
Yeah.
So I had a spinal block with that, and that was absolutely fine. When I got that taken out as well, I got it taken out at about, I think it's 34 weeks they take it out. So that's when baby's safe and she's able to come without no complications, basically, and being premature.
Yeah.
So that was taken out, and I had no pain after that either, which was fine. And so yeah, going back to my birth, I had the epidural, and apparently my mum said I screamed, and she said that pain was not normal for you, because I was in pain already, and like everyone said, my pain threshold was so, so good.
Yeah.
So my mum was like, oh my god, she's in pain. And then my mum started getting into a bit of a state. And all of a sudden, the nurse, my mum asked the nurse, and she said, what's happened? Why is she in so much pain? She said, right, I'm going to come round in a minute and tell Bo, like, what's happened. I obviously didn't hear none of this. I was in absolute agony. Mm. I can't even explain to you the feeling of that pain. But yes, the anaesthetist came round to me, and she said, right, what I've done, I've actually, so you have your spine and then another line next to it. So basically you can either do a spinal block or an epidural.
Yeah.
She's ended up going into the middle of those. Wow. And doing like a dural puncture. So she's done it wrong, basically. She's gone in the wrong place. So my mum's obviously started freaking out, and they tried to recorrect it. They gave me something, I can't remember what it was, but my blood pressure went so low, I was unresponsive. I remember my mum and my other half like shaking me, like my eyes were rolling to the back of my head, apparently. I don't remember any of this, like this was total blur to me. So my mum obviously started getting into such a panic,
yeah.
Where I was unresponsive, and then Lilia's heart rate really, really dropped quite rapidly. So, and then they gave me something else, injected me something else, which raised my blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to come back around, and then I was like, right, we're going to recorrect the epidural. I was like, right, okay. So they've gone in again, and this epidural's gone wrong again, and it's ended up basically numbing me all down, but the pain was radiating to my left hip. So every time I was getting that contraction, I was getting it in my left side. And as mums all know, the contraction pain is the worst. But getting it in that one place, I think I'd rather it all over.
Yeah.
No, but getting it in that one place, when the contraction was coming, I was just trying to ease it, but there was no easing it. And they was making me push as well. So throughout all of these contractions, I was trying to push and push and push. So I was pushing for a good few hours.
Yeah.
And then all of this stuff going wrong as well. And I was just like, I give up. Like, I was literally saying to them, just give me a C-section.
Yeah.
Rip her out. I was saying anything.
Just take this baby out. Yeah.
But they wasn't believing me that she wasn't coming out. Like, I'd pushed for so long.
Yeah.
And they kept telling me to push and push and push. And I've like, I've literally had everything. I've had Pefidine, I've had Gessinair, I've had 2 epidurals now. Like, it's an absolute joke. Mm. Like, and they just was not believing me. So I think it got to early hours. Friday morning, and I was literally saying to them, I have nothing left in me, I cannot do it. Like, I felt so ill.
Mm.
So, and then they decided to give me, so go into my spine a third time and give me a spinal block.
Mm-hmm.
So this eventually worked.
Yeah.
So I was numb from obviously the waist down, and they tried, went into theatre. They was gonna try and get her out with a suction cup.
Mm-hmm.
So tried to go in, but doing this, she wouldn't come out. There was no room, so they had to cut to me. I think it's called an episiotomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they cut off to the left of me,
mm-hmm.
so not down. They cut off to the left of me, mm-hmm. and then they got her out with forceps,
mm-hmm.
and that was awful because when she came out, she had where the suction cup is. Obviously, they've tried so hard.
Yeah.
Head just looked awful, bless her. Yeah. It was really, really hard. And then they come out with this forceps, and then she had a big mark across her face where the forceps have obviously grabbed her. Yeah. So that was awful. But I've actually got a film, and you know what? I watch it near enough every week because it just reminds me how special she is. And she came out, and I've got a film of her like just being put onto my chest, and it's just the best thing ever. But
yeah,
all of that, I mean, that was traumatizing. It does make me think, yeah. I think I could go through it again. I really don't. Like, mum say, you do forget about
it. You do. It's amazing how you forget. But yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's actually so fascinating listening to you. Because there are aspects of that I can relate to.
Really?
With my two, actually. And what you've described, there's a bit of a combination of the two that I, you know, two very different births, but different complications. And the first one was stuck. The second one was really, really late and just wasn't budging, and the induction and all of these things. And I really feel like I had an emergency spinal with the first, and I ended up having an epidural with the second. Very different experiences. But when you said about that, you know, they got it in the wrong place. And then even then, when they did do it, things weren't right. And these are all things that I think, as when we're in labor or we're having a baby, we are so vulnerable, where you can't control anything, and you're literally at the mercy of those around you, aren't you? And it's
so hard because when I was under Pefidine, so when they come round with a consent form to give you the epidural,
yeah,
your head on pethidine, so you don't know what you want and what you should have. And this is what I was saying to her, what should I have? I don't know what to have. I've had this and this and this.
Yeah.
So what do I do now? What is the outcome? What should I do?
You can't make a sound mind
and
decision,
yeah, you
can
can't really. It's like you're talking to thin air. Like, how are you meant to know what to have to get this baby out?
Yeah.
So I think girls need to really be aware,
yeah,
of the side effects of an epidural. I mean, yeah, I thought, oh yeah, I'd have a epidural. That's absolutely fine. I won't feel nothing.
Mm.
But it's the aftermath as well. So I was in agony. I couldn't really look after Lilia for about a week and a half. Mm. We was in hospital for 2 weeks,
yeah,
which was awful, like staring at the same four walls and just not being able to look after my daughter how I should have been,
yeah,
not able to feed her. So I was literally stiff from my neck, so I'd say about the middle of my spine down.
Mm.
Could hardly turn my head, like the pain of it was awful. When I literally thought that pain was going to be over, as soon as she was out, I thought, right, that's it, a couple of days, I'll probably be able to go home. And
why was that, do you think? Was it to do with what went wrong?
So this was the, yeah, so this was the aftermath of the dural puncture that I had.
Right.
And even after all of this, I still had to undergo theatre and go in my spine again. I had what they call is a blood patch.
Right.
Basically take blood from your arm,
mm,
and then they put it into your spine. So basically the dural puncture is you've got your spine and when they're going wrong it makes like a hole, as you will,
mm-hmm,
and gradually over time blood ends up filling that hole,
yeah,
to mending your spine again and stop you from getting like the stiffness and the headaches,
yeah,
like the fluid around your brain that it affects,
yeah.
So it's actually initially really dangerous when you speak about it,
yeah,
like affecting stuff,
yeah.
So they take blood from your arm, put it into your spine, and initially they say the first one might not work, but the surgeon said to me, oh yes, it should work, like you shouldn't have no complications. My first blood patch did not work, and if anything, made me worse. So I had that over, I think it was over about 4 days after I was there, 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
Had that, and they were speaking about another, having a second blood patch, and I was like, well, what if this doesn't work? And obviously going into your spine there's always complications that of being paralyzed and things like that, so all of that was going through my head and I was just petrified.
Mm.
And then I'd say a couple of days later Lilia was in her Moses basket and the nurse come in and she could obviously see she was sick a little bit. And I said, oh, was she, like, I'm sure, I didn't hear anything. Anyway, they've picked her blanket up and the vomit was like a luminous green. So the nurse was like, oh my god, like, that's really not right. So obviously I started to panic. She was like, right, I'm gonna call the baby doctor just to have a look at it, should be fine anyway. Baby doctor's come down and they've taken her to go and get examined. She said, oh, I just want to go and have a look. And I was like, oh, brilliant. So I was thinking, my baby's gone now, where is she? And then the nurse came back without Lilia and I was like, where is she? She was like, so we've had to keep her in. And they're speaking to me about green fluid, just like infection, or it could be one of her intestines that are twisted or a blockage that they was worried about. So then I was having all this whilst I was literally laid up in bed.
You're trying to recover. Yeah.
Trying to recover myself. And then my daughter's going through that. So I feel like I just shoved myself way to the side and I was like, right, where is she? I want to go and see her. So she was kept into the baby unit for about a day. And then she got transferred to King's College Hospital. And then she was there for about 2 days. So she was away from me for 2 days, which I cannot even explain to you. Oh. The feeling when you're a new mum, your baby being taken away from you. It was the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
So that was awful for me. So my other half, shall I say, my ex at the time, he was there with her and he was having to give me updates because they said to me, basically, if I discharged myself then from the hospital that I was in, you wouldn't get the care that you need. And if you need another blood patch, you won't get it because you'll basically have to go through A&E again, which is ridiculous. So yes, I couldn't, yeah, discharge myself. I couldn't go with her. She was like over 2 hours away from me.
You should have been able to transfer you together, surely. That's really...
I know. And this is what we said. Yeah. Why can't I? Because King's College is a better hospital,
yeah,
as well.
They can treat you there, surely. They...
Exactly. So we tried this, but no, we tried for about a day to get me transferred over to King's and wasn't possible. So over them 2 days, Lilia was getting contrast done, so to see how her flow was going through to her bowels and things like that, because they was really worried about it. So luckily enough, after 2 days, she was brought back to me. That feeling when your baby is brought back, it's just like giving birth all over again. Oh, it's horrible.
Did you, notice, random question, did you notice that, like, a smell, like, the pheromones from her head, like, when you had her back, did you have this overwhelming, like, just the smell of her? There's a reason
she's got that baby smell. Yeah. Do you know what? She has not got rid of it, even when you smell her now, like, I bath her now and things like that with all different potions and lotions, and she still smells that.
I'm certain there's, because, like, babies have that anyway, and it's, like, a thing about they release these pheromones to create a smell that is attractive to the mother. And wildlife do this because it's to stop the mums abandoning the young in the wild, not humans.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, so it's actually a thing, but I am curious as to whether that is heightened when a mum and baby are separated. Because when my son was in neonatal initially, I had this, and I noticed that smell overwhelmingly strong with him, more so than my daughter, who was with me the whole time, and we were out by, you know, the same day. And so, like, there was a enhanced level of this, like, pheromone release. And I wonder if it is part of that, because it's like, it connects you.
When she was away from me for 2 days, the day she left, so she was sick over, like, a white baby grow.
Aww.
Literally green. It was awful. But I slept with that for the 2 days because that was the last thing she wore.
Yeah.
And it was the last thing that had her smell on it. Even though my mum was like, "But it's got sick on it." And I was like, "I don't care." Yeah. I just had it on my chest. It was, honestly, I had to smell her because I could not. It was the worst 2 days of my life by far. I just felt like I needed something to be able to sense that she was here, basically. So
get to the bottom of what was going on with her?
No, so they literally just think it was because Lily has suffered with constipation since she was born. So she, poor son, she hasn't had it easy at all. So she's, where she suffered from the constipation, they was worried that it came up the other way as well, but they think it was literally just because she was constipated and she was just getting a little bit blocked where she was frustrated. So I think, and that was literally the only bit of sick that she had, the green sick. So it's like biofluid, like, you know, like the lining of your stomach, basically. Yeah. So, yeah, but they thank God there's nothing wrong. And because I think that was the worrying thing, that something was twisted or there was a blockage there, because that can obviously cause much more complication.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's been perfect. She's my little right right now.
Oh, well, it's good that it was all checked, even though it was horrible for you being away from her, but knowing that she, you know.
I feel like she had a full MOT. Yeah. Being at Kingswell, I know they're such a good hospital.
Yeah.
And being there, I was like, she's actually in the best place possible.
Yeah.
So she had a full MOT. She had from head to toe check up. Yes. So to be there, I'm actually quite thankful she went there.
Yeah, yeah. And now you're just going to appreciate everything even more every second that you're with her. So
I went away yesterday was my first day back, like, proper fashion shooting, and I had to go up to Liverpool, and I don't think I've ever been away from her for more than an hour, something like that. And oh my god, the whole day felt like it dragged. And it was so funny because my manager was saying to me, "You're swaying," and I was doing the sway, but with my suitcase. It's like the mummy sway, they call it, isn't it? Standing there like this, so I feel like I'm constantly swaying or bumping now, because I feel like she's here.
You'll do that for years.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, like, it's, I think it's so good sharing this, and I think it's really important as well, because every, you know, story is really, really unique, and there are, as we said before, so many twists and turns that can happen. And whilst obviously we wouldn't want to scare anybody, I think it's preparation, isn't it? And if you are aware that things can happen, like, you and I have both been in positions where we've had a form shoved at us to sign when we're not in a sound mind to sign it, and it's like, you don't know what the risks are, you don't know what you're signing away, and you just have to trust. But actually, we could all, like, be told a bit more about possibilities, and just, like, if this happened, this is what would be presented to you, and these are the risks and these are the choices, just to give us a little bit more of a, because I think that we're kind of just, okay, great, brilliant, let's go, with a very much it'll be fine attitude. But it'd be really good, I think, to be a bit more prepared for the various eventualities, so that we can almost in advance make some decisions of like, well, if this were to happen, this is what I would want, and this would be plan A and this would be plan B.
Yeah, definitely. I think the birthing plan, you sort of need to scrap what you want and what will may happen.
Yeah.
But like I said, you do need to be prepared for if something does go wrong, because it happens way too often. Yeah. And I mean, I ended up having only one bub patch. I didn't have the second done, because they basically said to me, if you have the second one, it is a risk that you could be paralysed or something bad could happen. You can have a blood clot in the brain. Mm. And even still to this day, I think that's going to be in my mind, because it forms the in the brain. If there's too much fluid in the brain, it happens over a certain amount of time. So even in 6 months' time, I could find out something's wrong, you know? So I feel like it's always in the back of your mind. Mm. Something could still go wrong with you. Mm. So I feel like you're never out the loop, really. Yeah. But it is, I think girls do really need to sit and think how and what they want. But honestly, I think if I had another one, I'd go in for elective C-section. Yeah. You know what you're getting. You have a day, even when she's coming out. I think that is the way to go. But even still, you have an epidural. So I think the epidurals really need to be analysed and more information needs to come out about them, because it wasn't nice, my birth, at all. No. I'm not going to lie to anyone, say it was perfect, but I got something perfect out of it.
The end result, but,
that could have totally changed, you know? Yeah. So it does need to be spoken about more.
It does. And in all honesty, how many of us, I know, out there listening would say that they've had an epidural without really even knowing what it is, quite honestly. Yeah. Like, I've had a spinal and an epidural, and to be honest, I didn't know at the time what the difference even was, or that they're
when I first thought they was basically the same thing. But they're not. So
exactly. There's not enough information about that, and like, I think yes, it's up to us individually to seek that information and to take ownership of that, but we're given, I guess, mainstream, there's NCT, I didn't do any of that, I did hypnobirthing. No. But it's not, as we go through our sort of like the GP practice and just what you get given and these packs of information, there could be a bit more guidance, I think.
Definitely. I was having to ask people because no one was telling me about anything. I didn't even get an appointment with a midwife to say this is what's going to happen or like what you want to do. They just say, what's your birthing plan? I'm just like, I don't know, I've never had a baby before and I have no clue what I want. So I feel like you do have to ask, and I think that's the best thing is to ask. If you're worried or you don't know about something, always ask, because if you don't, there you go, they're gonna say, well, you didn't tell us. So
don't wait to be told, I think is the message, isn't it? Go out there and find the answers you need and get yourself educated on this stuff that we don't know about. Why would we? Who don't know until we need to know, right? So
it happens when you're having a baby.
That's so helpful actually, and insightful. And tell me a bit about then, how are things going with sleep? Obviously, that being my topic, I'm keen to know, like, how are you doing, how is Lilia doing? It's early days, I know, but
so she is, I can't believe she's 7 weeks now. She's gonna be 7 weeks on Friday, 8 weeks on Friday. I cannot believe, like, people were saying to me, oh, honestly, like, cherish this time, it goes so quick. I didn't think it would go this quick. I cannot believe she's going to be 8 weeks on Friday. And they say, don't they, after 8 weeks, they're not a newborn anymore. They're 2 months. So it's like, she's trying to get older. And she's just changing every single day. Yeah. Like, it's about every day. And I'm like, oh, my God, this wasn't here. Or this has changed. Or honestly, I just can't believe it. It is shocking. But my sleeping at the moment, I feel like since Lilia has been born, I've been running on adrenaline.
Yep.
So even my mum said the other day, you're taking care of Lilia, but you need to take care of yourself because you're not taking care of yourself. And I'm a bit like, oh, whatever, if she's fine, whatever. So I feel like at the moment, her sleep is very up and down. The other day, she slept like 7 hours and didn't wake up.
Wow.
I was like, do you think her, like, what's wrong? And she was like, no, like, and this is what I mean. People, so you hear all different things. If they're sleeping too much, wake them. And then other people don't wake their children until they want to be woken up, or if they wake up themselves, obviously. So I obviously didn't wake up, and she's absolutely fine. Like, some days she sleeps like over, about 7 hours.
That's great.
I think that's how long it is, 7 hours. Yeah. And I'm like, that's lovely. Yeah. I get a little
take it.
Sleep. But to be fair, look, she is obviously newborn. I feel like it's really hard to get into a routine when they're this young.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to put in a routine in place already, like bath at 8 o'clock and then a bottle and then try and put her down. Yeah. So I'll put her down maybe about 9:30, 10.
Yeah.
And to be fair, she's having about one feed at night. Yeah. So I don't think that's too bad. She was every 2-3 hours.
Yeah.
And to be fair, she is a very greedy baby. Very greedy. She's on 5 ounces every like 2-3 hours during the day as well. She's very hungry. Yeah. All the time. So, and even midwives say then, like, well, you can feed them when you want or wake them up after two hours if they're not waking up. I'm just like, well, I'm just gonna let her tell me. Yeah. When she's hungry. Well, like, I always listen to the baby. If she's hungry. Yeah. She will tell me.
And it
she's
sounds like she
definitely
is.
Made it aware.
Yeah that's great. And yeah, and this kind of the theory behind that, like waking them up or waking them up to feed them, my advice would always be there is sometimes a reason to do that, but know what the reason is. Like, if you've got a reason. If you don't have a reason in that, you know, Lilia is sleeping that length of time, she's waking up happy, she's feeding perfectly well, she's following a healthy growth curve, there isn't any need, you know, in the early weeks, if there's any jaundice or if they're having a difficult time taking on enough calories, there can be cause for waking them up to feed them and stuff like that. But
yeah,
if there's no need to, she's fine.
A lot throughout the day as well. Like, say if she's sleeping 7 hours consecutively, then I'd get a bit worried. But it's not. It's literally once in a blue moon. And
that's her long stretch.
So recently, she's actually been quite ill. So I've been up and down the hospital with her, because as soon as something's like, I get an inkling of something, that's it, hospital. I'm straight up there. I am a worrying mum, I am. So I just take her straight up there. And she's actually had a little bit of a cold. And so she had green poo last week, and I think I got like PTSD, because I was thinking, oh my god, green sick, green poo.
Yeah.
Like, in hospital, my anxiety just went crazy, so I took her straight up there. But they said she was fine. They think she's got like a bit of a cold and a bit of a neurovirus going on at the moment.
Yep.
So that wasn't nice for her, bless her. So I feel like she needed that sleep to revive herself, sort of thing. So when they sleep, they obviously do need
they need it. And that's the other thing to always ask yourself, if you know, baby sleeping, or even when she's a bit older, you know, when little one's sleeping, like, probably they're sleeping because they need the sleep, because they're tired, because they're
cold.
We all do. We sleep more when we're under the weather. It doesn't sound like you've got anything to worry about, but definitely you want to look after yourself too. As mums, we do troop, don't we? And we go like, as long as they're okay, we put ourselves last.
Yeah.
But you know, in fact, my daughter's very good at saying this, because she, you know, she's now 11 and a half, but she will say, you need to look after you, because that's how you look after us. And I'm like, yeah, good that she sees that. And like, so how, like, you've done so well, honestly, Bo, you have done so well. Like, you've been through a challenging experience. You've got the absolute gorgeous baby at the other side of all of that. You've also done a lot of this on your own, haven't you, as well? She's gonna smile now. She's gonna give us a smile. It has. But look at you know, you're there, like, looking gorgeous, smiling still through it, and you know, amazing baby with you too. What would be your sort of like any closing message to our listeners, if there was one thing you would say, like, if there's one thing you take away from today, what would you want people to take away?
I mean, I've got a couple. I think it's definitely about the epidural. Just make sure you know the outcomes and the aftermath, and if things can go wrong, because you need to take into account that it does. Because like me and you, we've had that experience of it going wrong, and it was not nice.
Yeah.
Not being able to look after Lilia for the week after, and even still now, when I'm leaning over, the backache and the headaches I even still get because of it is not nice.
Yeah.
But obviously, because she's here perfect, you do overlook it, you do. But in the same sense, you really need to think about what you're having. And if you're going to be under perfidine, don't sign anything. Don't sign a consent form, because mine went wrong. And it's just a bit like, well, what do I do now then? So it's a really tricky one. But as well, I think a note to single mums out there as well, because I am now a single mum. So you can do it. I didn't think I'd be able to do it. I really didn't. But the past few weeks, I've been getting back to myself, and I think I'm actually quite proud of myself but I'm actually quite proud of myself how I've adjusted to mum life as well, and I've not got frustrated with her, or I've not thought to myself I can't do it. I mean, don't get me wrong, I have some days when I'm so low and I think to myself, I actually don't think I can do it on my own. But you can, if you have the right support system around you to lift you up. And I mean, the best support system is you, isn't it? She keeps me going every day, and it's just a different kind of love you get. It is crazy, isn't it? The love for a child you get, you just no love like no other. But yeah, so single mums as well, you can do it.
You can do it. You can do it all. You absolutely can. We were built to. Exactly. Women rule the world.
Exactly. They do rule the world.
Oh, Bo, it's been such a pleasure to talk with you today. And thank you for being so transparent with everything and just so real and sharing, you know, your real story. Because I think it's there's lots of valuable lessons in that. And it's really, really
I want my, like my Instagram is very transparent place. So I'm very transparent. Everyone. I think people like that because I'm not gonna tell someone the wrong thing or say that something's fine when it's really not. So yeah, make my Instagram a safe place. My DMs are always open to mums, and I actually have a few messages from mums per day asking about experiences or even how I'm doing, how Lilia's doing, and it's really nice. So I like my Instagram to be a safe place for mums, as well as I am a fashion mum as well, but
if people want to know where
and stuff, yeah, definitely. If people are worried about anything or if they're having the same complaints as me, my messages are always open to any mum.
Go and drop a message if you want to find out more. What's your? Can we share your handle?
Yeah, it is _oraymond_.
Perfect. And we'll put that in the show notes as well. But there you go, everyone. You can go and check out more about Bo and Lilia, see how she's progressing over on her Instagram. Once again, Bo, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been lovely to actually open up and have a chat about things.
Yeah, good for you. So proud of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bo. Thanks for joining us today. Make sure you hit the follow or subscribe button on your podcast app so that you don't miss a juicy episode. And if you want to find out more about how Sleep Nanny can help you or about becoming a sleep consultant franchisee, head over to the Sleep Nanny website on sleepnanny.co.uk. If you've enjoyed the episode today, please help us spread the goodness and share it with a friend and leave us a podcast review so that more people can benefit from the takeaways that make parenting feel a little lighter. See you for the next episode of the Sleep Nanny podcast.